Before I begin, I need a quick word with him on high. Is my microphone working? Oh, I mean him on high. I meant him. I actually meant Jim on high. Yeah, it seems to be working now. Last Sunday, we celebrated Easter. We talked about how on Easter Sunday, Jesus first appeared to Mary Magdalene, and then later that evening appeared to all of his male disciples. But in the Gospel of John, we read Thomas, one of the 12 called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples kept telling him, "We've seen the Lord." But he couldn't believe them. He said to them, "Unless I see him with my own eyes, unless I see in his hands the marks made by the nails and can touch the nail prints, unless I can put my hand on his side where he was stabbed, I cannot believe. I can never believe it." Well, 8 days later, the disciples were once again in the same house, in the same room, and Thomas was with them this time. And Jesus once again came to them, once again said, as he had said 8 days earlier, "Peace be with you." Or in other words, he said, "Shalom," like any good Jewish boy. He said, "Shalom." And he turned to Thomas and said, "Reach out your finger here. See my hands. Put your hand and place it on it. Reach out and touch my side. Do not be faithless and incredulous, but stop your unbelief. Believe." And Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said, "Because you have seen me, Thomas, do you now believe and have faith? Blessed and to be envied are those who have never seen me, yet have believed and trusted and relied on me." Because of this one incident, Thomas has forever after been labeled Doubting Thomas. But is that really fair? I mean, if you read the accounts in all four Gospels, not one of them believed in the resurrection until they saw Jesus with their own eyes. Not the male disciples, till he appeared to them on the evening of Easter and showed him his hands and his side. They didn't believe he was real until, by one account, he ate a fish to prove that he was a real person. He was genuinely alive, not just an apparition. Mary Magdalene didn't believe in the resurrection. On the morning of Easter, she thought Jesus was dead and gone literally. Somebody had carried off his body. It wasn't until she heard him call her voice from behind and turned and saw him in the flesh that she believed. Paul, in the 26th chapter of Acts, it records an incident when Paul poses the question, "Why is it thought incredible by any of you that God can raise the dead?" Pardon me, but if you read on, what follows is Paul talking about how once he found it incredible. He found the whole Jesus Christ story incredible. He found all the things Jesus' followers were saying about him was beyond credibility. So much so that he believed it was blasphemous. He believed Christians should not only be ignored, they should be arrested. They should be thrown in jail. They should be punished just as well in these very circumstances, Paul was about to be thrown in jail for the very same thing. Now, it wasn't until Paul literally saw the light on the road to Damascus, until he had his own personal experience of Jesus, that he believed. But we don't call them doubting John or doubting Matthew. We don't call them doubting Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I'm not talking about the 60s musical group. No, we just let them get by with it. It's not fair. Truth be told, Jesus' disciples always had trouble believing in him. Always were full of doubts. Well, take the time. This is shortly after he, according to the Gospel of Matthew, has fed the multitude twice. Twice. Once he fed 4,000 people, another time 5,000 people. And every time it was just with a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, and both times they ended up having baskets full of leftovers. They had more left over than they started out with. They had just witnessed this, and yet, after they had just, like weeks before, witnessed this, they're on one of their many trips across the Sea of Galilee. You know, most of Jesus' ministry takes place in Galilee, around the Sea of Galilee. Once again, they've just crossed the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples forgot to pack lunch. They forgot to bring bread. I don't know, maybe it was John, maybe it was Peter, but somebody left the cooler at the dock. And they're concerned about, we're not going to have anything to eat. And Jesus looks at them and reminds them of what they just witnessed, reminds them that he had just fed the multitude. He says to them, why are you discussing among yourselves the fact that you have no bread? How little trust have you in me? How little faith? Do you not understand? Do you not remember the 5 loaves and the 5,000 and how many basketfuls of leftovers we had? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you took up after? Why are you talking about, we're going to run out of bread. We're going to run out of bread. I mean, Jesus Christ was miraculously Mr. Schnucks and Mr. Deerberg rolled into one, and they're saying, we're not going to have any groceries. Yeah, don't worry about that. Or again, there was a time we're told they were crossing the Sea of Galilee. And all of a sudden, as they're crossing the Sea of Galilee, they see a figure that appears to be walking on water in the distance coming towards them. And at first, they're frightened. They're frightened. The disciples see this figure walking on the sea. They're terrified and said, it must be a ghost. And they screamed out with fright. But instantly, Jesus spoke to them. He said, take courage. It's me. I am. Stop being afraid. Well, Peter is so impressed that Peter answers, Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water. And Jesus says, come. So Peter gets out of the boat and finds he can stand in the water. And he begins to walk toward Jesus. That is, until he feels the wind on his face and then starts to notice the waves. And as soon as his attention is distracted from Christ, he begins to sink. Well, actually, I think his faith sank first and began to drag him down. And he cries out, save me, I'm about to drown. And Jesus reached out his hand and caught Peter and held him and said, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? I mean, think about it. Jesus is standing there on the water. with no visible means of support. He himself had stepped out on the water. And all of a sudden, he thinks, well, this is impossible. This can't be. He's witnessing it with his own eyes, and yet he doubts. Or if there are plenty more examples, but I'll mention just one more. It's another one on the Sea of Galilee. Jesus had a long day. He'd been teaching and preaching, healing people. They get in the boat to cross over to go to another town along the sea. And Jesus decides to take a nap in the back of the boat and just let them row him across. I mean, these are seasoned fishermen who spent almost every day of their lives in the same kind of boat on the same big lake, the Sea of Galilee. So he just relaxes. What trouble could they get into? Well, after they row out a ways from shore, another violent storm blows up. And the wind's against them. And the waves start crashing over the bow of the boat. And they're terrified. They went and woke Jesus up, saying, Lord, rescue us. Save us. Don't you care about us? Don't you care if we perish? And he wakes up and he says to them, why are you so afraid? Oh, you have little faith. And he gets up and rebukes the wind and the seas. He says, peace, be still. And suddenly, the winds cease. The waters become calm. And the men were stunned. Stunned with bewildered wonder. And they marveled, saying, what kind of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? Personally, I think Jesus had gone back to sleep by then. The point of all this is that even though these people witnessed all these things, still they found it hard to believe. Believing never came easy to Jesus' disciples, according to the gospel. Doubt always came quite easy to them, according to the gospel. So I think the point here, the point that Jesus is really trying to drive home when he said that to Thomas 8 days after Easter, when he said, you believe because you've seen me? Blessed are those who will never see me and still believe. I don't think when Jesus said that, he was talking to Thomas or anyone in the room at the time. I'm pretty sure he was talking to us, to you and me, because we are the followers that will never get to see him. Not unless we can actually get an H.G. Wells time machine, or for all you Rocky and Bullwinkle fans, Mr. Peabody's way back. Barring that, we don't get to go back and witness these things. But, you know, if you look at the Gospels, it shows us that even the people did witness these things. And when we think about these disciples, they witnessed these things every day for about 3 years. Signs and wonders and healings and amazing things, and it was still a struggle to believe. Because it's a struggle to believe. It's a struggle to believe. Oh, I mean, it may not seem like a struggle when you're sitting here in church, or when you're reading one of those wonderful, inspiring truth books we have in our library, or when you're meditating in some quiet place, it may not seem hard to believe. Or even when you're out there in the world and everything seems to be going right. Everything seems to be falling in place just like you think it should. Then belief doesn't seem so difficult. But life doesn't tend to stay like that, does it? And what seems easy when we're walking beside the still waters can become very challenging when the sky darkens and the wind picks up and we hear that clap of thunder, that flash of lightning, and the still waters start to get choppy and white-capped. When we face a problem that believing that seems so easy, well, it doesn't seem so easy anymore. It seems pretty challenging. Jesus promises that all things are possible for one who believes. He assures us that if we have faith in God, truly I tell you, whoever says to this mountain, be lifted up and thrown into the sea and does not doubt at all in his heart, but believes that what he says will take place, it will be done for him. He says, for this reason I am telling you, whatever you ask for in prayer, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe, if you believe, if you trust, if you are confident that it is granted to you, you'll get it. If you pray believing you have received, you will receive. But what Jesus wants us to understand is, this is easier said than done. This is easier said than done. What Betty Davis said about getting older applies equally to believing. It ain't for sissies. It takes courage to believe. Now, true courage isn't being fearless. Being fearless is just stupid. If you have no fear, you're not paying attention. Courage is doing it anyway, even though you're afraid. Courage is stepping up even though it's a challenge. When some obstacle seems to cross our path and block our way, the truth is, believing will always be hard, and doubting will always be, oh, so easy. I mean, you gotta struggle to hang on to that belief, but the doubts, they just come flowing in. They just come pouring in like the spring rain. It is so easy to doubt. Because if we want to see miracles, we have to believe in some kind of unreasonable things. We have to believe in ourselves when we're full of self-doubt. We have to believe in divine order when everything, at least according to our plan, seems to be going wrong. We have to believe in our loved ones even when they seem to be going down, falling into the same trap they've fallen into oh so many times. We need to dare to believe that God is good, even when our way seems difficult. And we should not expect that to be easy. Faith isn't a gift. Faith is a choice. And generally speaking, it's a hard choice. If you want to have faith, well, there's another Betty Davis quote. You better fasten your seatbelt because it's liable to be a bumpy ride. But if you cling to your faith, if you fasten your seatbelt in faith and write it out, you will see things change. You will see strength manifest in your loved ones that they never seemed to have before. You will feel the presence of a power greater than your own in your own life. You will see that there's an order in what you thought was disorder. But you have to choose to have faith in spite of reasonable doubt. Because judging by appearances, doubt is always going to seem more reasonable than believing. Than believing in a loved one who maybe has let you down. Than believing in God when it seems like God has let you down. But if you believe, you can move mountains. Although they may not move immediately. They may seem to play chicken with you. You may be believing and heading toward that mountain, and it may seem like, you know, it's not moving. You may feel like you're headed right, head on into that mountain. And, well, it's not really that God makes you play chicken. It's that God will open doors, but nobody opens the door until you get to the threshold. Until you get to the stoop. I mean, God, our Father, is like my Father. What do you want me to do, air condition the whole neighborhood? No, God opens doors, but kind of like deer birds and schnooks open doors. They open when you get there, but not when you're 100 yards away, or 50, or 20, or even 5. You got to get pretty close before the door opens. But they always do. Magically seem to open. And that's how believing works. Nowhere is there any promise in the New Testament that believing is going to be easy, that faith is going to be simple, that doubts won't arise. Actually, it pretty much suggests just the opposite. But the promise is, if even though you haven't seen it, even though you've only read about the things that Jesus did or that people have done in Unity, in the testimonials and books and magazines, even if you've only read about it, if you choose to do the hard thing, and overcome your doubts, and believe. Well, blessed are you. Blessed shall you be. So the real question when facing a challenge and hoping for a miracle is simple. It all boils down to this. Can you believe it? Let's pray. And let's close our eyes and open our faculty of faith to the reality of God. God is here with us now. God is here with us now and always. But that presence doesn't become real until we believe. Believing, faith, that's kind of like God's on switch. So let's switch on that God light now. Let's know with all our strength that there's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives. God the good. Omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent, and so it is. so it